Hey, you're listening to Naptime Investigations, a true crime podcast. What we're about to discuss is likely disturbing and contains mature content with the use of adult language and the occasional mom joke. Listener discretion is advised.
You can find us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations or Twitter at Naptime_podcasts. We're your hosts. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Amanda. We're just a couple of internet mom friends who like to talk about true crime and conspiracies when we can get our children to sleep.
Thanks for being our kind of person and joining us to talk about what normal people think isn't appropriate for small talk.
Losers.
Lame.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm hungry.
Let's talk about Jim Jones.
Okay.
Jim Jones was a preacher and civil rights activist that turned into one of the most famous cult leaders of all time. He was born May 13th, 1931 in Crate, Indiana. And he was born to James Jones, a World War I veteran, and Lynetta Jones. He was born almost at the start of the Great Depression. I do want to say that. 1929 is when the Great Depression started here in the U.S., and it went into the late 30s. So he was born just at the start of the Late Depression. And due to the economic atmosphere, the Jones family actually lived in a shack, and they didn't have any plumbing. It was the Depression, very poor.
Right.
It's crazy to think that that was less than 100 years ago.
That's nuts.
Jones was an avid reader in his adolescence. He loved to read about odd things, though. He loved to read about Stalin and Marxism and Gandhi and Hitler. This guided him to be very, 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 like, obsessively interested into religion. Jones was a weird kid and had a hard time making friends because he was so obsessed with religion and death. Kids were like, this is not normal. This is not something that we normally talk about or whatever. So he was a little... People were standoffy about him.
Sure.
It is reported during his childhood that he would often hold funerals for small animals. And he even killed a cat by stabbing it.
Okay, that's very odd.
Yeah, not good. So Jones's father, Jones and people that knew the family actually reported that James Jones, Jim's father, was part of the KKK.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Ku Klux Klan became very popular during the Depression era, especially in Indiana. So it was a very common thing. And Jones claimed that he got into many, 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 many arguments with his father over this. And he didn't talk to him for a while after he refused to let a black friend of one of the children's into the home.
Oh my God.
From a young age, Jones was very adamant about civil rights and equality and stuff like that. That is one thing that I will say about him, is that he was very active in the civil rights movement. Jones' parents ended up separating, and Jones relocated with his mother to Richmond, Indiana. In 1949, Jim married Marceline, and she was a nurse. The two moved to Bloomington, Indiana, but soon moved to Indianapolis not long after. So I think it was like 1951 that they relocated to Indianapolis. Jones was borderline obsessed with communism and was very upset and frustrated with how the United States perceived communism as a whole. And this was in the height of, what was it called? Like they were afraid of Russia having the spies and all these other things, right? So in 1951, Jones was 20 years old at the time. He started going to Communist Party meetings, and he identified as not Democratic Party, not Republican, not anything but a communist.
Wow.
It's really funny. I actually have I use this word loosely, friend at work who identifies as a communist, and that's what he's registered to vote as. So I do want to say that Jones actually studied Adolf Hitler to learn how to manipulate members of his church or people in general. Like, it wasn't just specifically to manipulate church members. But Jones needed a way to preach his Marxism beliefs, and he decided that opening a church would be the best way to do this. he knew that this would be a safe way to preach Marxism because he didn't want to be like the other people who were getting in trouble for being a communist or relating to Marxism and stuff. In 1952, Jones became a student pastor in Somerset Southside Methodist Church in Indianapolis, Indiana. He ended up leaving that church because they wouldn't allow him to hold integrated services that had multiracial and have a multiracial congregation. So he wanted integration.
I'm so torn on this gentleman.
I know.
Because I'm like, hell yeah for integration, but also no on communism.
And mass murder suicide. It's fine.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're not there yet, but anyway, he did have some great qualities when it came to civil rights.
As good of qualities as you can for this garbage human.
Yes. So 1954, Jones rented a space and started his own church and originally named it Community Unity Church.
I can hear them running around upstairs.
That's Chase crawling. He slaps the floor when he crawls. In 1956, Jones actually bought his first church building. He specifically wanted it in the neighborhood that he bought it in because it was a diverse and racially mixed neighborhood in Indianapolis. So it had multi-races, and that's what he wanted. He originally named it Wings of Deliverance, but the same year, he actually renamed it to the People's Temple Full Gospel Church.
Okay, the first one sounds very communist.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So this was actually the first time he used People's Temple in the church's name. It will evolve over time, but it's mostly his church is actually mostly referred to as the People's Temple. So the temple was referred to a religious movement more than just like a religion. And the religious movement combined elements of Christianity and communism and a skewed version of socialist ideologies. But they had an emphasis on race equality. So that was their biggest selling point, is they wanted race equality and they wanted integration and they wanted all of those things.
Do we think he was doing this in, like, do we truly think that he felt like this? Or is it that he just wanted to put on this facade to have more people in his church?
So I think he felt like this not because he wanted to be a good person, but because in other countries, they did not segregate.
Okay. Fair enough.
So Jones previously saw that faith healing brought in crowds of people, and he decided to start faith healing. I'm using air quotes because he decided to start doing faith healing to get some income. And Jim convinced people that he was not only a faith healer, but he was a clairvoyant as well.
I can guarantee you're not.
Yeah. Jim Jones would get animal organs like chicken livers and claim that it was cancerous tissue that he faith healed out from someone's body and that it was removed due to the faith healing.
It sounds like that pastor. There's a pastor out there that my grandma, she used to do event coordination, and she came into one and he was like claiming to heal people if they just donated money to his cause and stuff. Like, this is like as of recent. Like,
yeah,
it's wild.
I can tell you right now, people, it's not real. It's not real.
Medicine is real.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, so in addition to the buying organs and saying that he healed it out of people, so this was obviously like increasing people to come. They were like, oh my God,
sure.
He's faith healing. He's a clairvoyant. Like, he's doing,
you can see it.
All of these things. He would make the secretary of the church dress up as a woman with a disability.
Oh my God. He would
place her in the crowd and she'd be in a wheelchair. And the audience would, so Jim and the audience would command her to stand. They would faith heal her together. And she would stand, man. She would stand. She would walk. She would start by like barely being able to stand and being like dizzy or like not being able to stand well. And then like
struggling.
Then she'd be dancing. Like they'd command her to dance. This made people obviously believe it. They saw it with their own eyes.
Oh, people, don't be this gullible.
Made people walk. Like, literally. And everyone would clearly go crazy. They would be like, woo! So the more and more that he did this, the more and more people showed up. People wanted to be a part of this. People wanted to see the healing. They wanted to donate. They wanted to do all these things. I watched a documentary on this, and even his son, Jim Jones Jr., actually even said, like, in the documentary, like, flat out, like, he was tricking people and he was manipulating people, and obviously he was a con man.
Oh my God.
Some of the money they actually raised was donated to the poor and to civil rights activism, but a lot of it was to finance the church. So while all this is going on, I want to talk about his civil rights journey that he was on. He was surprisingly doing some somewhat good things in civil rights activism. In 1960, Indianapolis mayor appointed Jim Jones and the director of the local Human Rights Commission. Jones helped to racially integrate churches and restaurants, the Indianapolis Police Department, movie theaters, hospitals. He actually was put in the hospital one time, and he was put in one of the black wards, is what they called it. And he refused to move. They were like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he was like, no, I'll stay here. Like, it's fine. And so, like, he actually did some boots on the ground stuff for the movement. During all this, some swastikas were painted on a few of the black families' homes, and Jones marched his happy ass around through the neighborhood, being an ally for the black community. So he was being an ally for the black community and confronting and guiding white families in the integration and saying, like, hey, like, I know this is different and new for everyone, but, like, we got to do this, and this is why we have to do it, and this is why these things are wrong and whatever.
Can we get him in today's society, but, like, without killing people?
Hold, please. Yes, in theory, like, yes. I think that he's, like...
I need that part of him. Yeah. Not anything else, but that part.
That one little part, yeah. So he set up sit-in operations and protests to catch and expose restaurants for refusing to serve black customers. People were very, I cannot emphasize this enough. People were very critical of him and his integrationalist views. They drew swastikas on his temple. They put dynamite in the temple. They threw a dead cat at his house. And this was making threatening phone calls to their home. A little bit about his family. Jones and his wife adopted several children. And they all didn't look like them. They referred to themselves as the Rainbow Family. So this, I feel like, was more for the recognition and, like, the clout, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, I hope that he cared for his kids.
So they started the Rainbow Family. And so in 1959, the couple had their only biological child and named him Stephen Gandhi.
I hate it here.
Right. So they actually were the first white couple to actually adopt a black child in Indiana, the Jones family. They adopted black children, Native American children, Korean. They even actually adopted a white child as well, a white son. So they did not discriminate.
How many children did they have?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was like six or something. Lot. Yeah. They actually encouraged people who belonged to the church to adopt children as well, specifically from the Korean War. So they adopted some children from Korea post-war, and they were encouraging people to do that as well. Obviously, his political views were communism, but he hated, with a capital H, capitalism. He hated capitalism. He protested against it every chance he could. he supported a very skewed, very skewed version of socialism that he modified to fit his crazy practices and beliefs. Right around this time, in 1963, Jim Jones moved his group to California, so his church to California, and was able to open actually several locations throughout the state, but his headquarters and his main church was actually in San Francisco. Jones connected with a lot of people in the Democratic Party, and that increased his members of the church. And I found a lot of very, very conflicting numbers on this. The church grew from anywhere to 3,000 to 20,000 members. Like, it was...
But I mean, still a significant increase.
Oh, definitely. So it was a lot of... And that they literally were all over. So during this time, he was literally in a downward spiral. So I know we kind of talked about Jones as a child, but let's talk about him as an adult. He was a control freak, and I cannot stress that enough. Like... control freak.
Definition of.
He was making people add him to their bank accounts, their mortgages. In a few cases, he even convinced people to make them their power, like his, make him their power of attorney.
There was that doctor that did that. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay, I'll cover it.
Yes. He was having people sign blank pieces of paper. And he would do whatever he wanted with it after the fact. He would just keep it on file and just, some people, these people had like no idea what they were signing and like what they were going to use it for. And this is how like blindly these people were following him. He had parents sign fake confessions that they were sexually abusing and molesting their own children to have the potential to blackmail them in the future if he needed to, just in case they wanted to leave the church or anything like that.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. He would often manipulate marriages, turning spouses against one another. Sometimes he would even be like, you're married to this person, but like, you're gonna get a divorce and marry this other person. He would literally make people get divorced and like marry other people that he...
Okay. No. He would convince them, but these people did it on their own.
Oh, yeah. Let's
be real about that.
Well, yes, but...
Yes and no, but...
We talked about... Yes. We talked about how he studied Hitler to manipulate people and stuff. So he was very manipulative. If the people left the church, Jones saw them as traitors. And it's reported that he would have had them killed if he could. So people were genuinely in fear for their life. A small group of people decided to leave. And his paranoia was horrible. He thought that the FBI was watching him. And it just got bad. Not that it wasn't bad before. But.
Right.
Members were describing the atmosphere as not knowing who to trust, and they couldn't even trust their own family or their pastor or anyone. Literally, like, they just didn't know. He wanted to be everything to everyone. He would tell people that he was their mother, their father, their husband, their wife, their child, but most of all, their savior. People believed it.
Gross.
He used a lot of physical and psychological tactics that other cult leaders would often use: isolation, physical and mental abuse, sexual abuse, sleep deprivation, crazy work hours, manipulation, alienation from everyone you love. He used all those tactics and he was good at them. He'd refer to himself as Father, as in like God. He claimed that he was from heaven. He was very delusional. He sometimes asked, like I said, married couples to divorce and then prearrange different marriages, which actually just kept increasing as time went on.
That's psychotic.
Jones would abuse people, like physically abuse people in front of crowds of people by calling people up front during services or large meetings, and he would beat them. And the people at the services or the meetings would sometimes encourage it. Like, I think that they would encourage it so they didn't have to be susceptible to it.
Sure.
He would often laugh as he was beating people till they're bleeding. He would, like, in this documentary, it's actually on, I think it's on Hulu.
What's it called?
I think it was like Truth, Lies, and Something. It was good. It was worth the watch. So his laughter in it, so he recorded everything and it was like haunting. It was like the creepiest giggle ever. So during this time, Jones was actually suffering from addiction issues as well. Jim Jones was flat out an addict. He was addicted to sex, drugs, power, anything that made him feel good.
Sure.
He was sleeping with a lot of his followers and didn't discriminate with gender. He was sleeping with younger members, very, very young members, like children almost.
Oh, great. So to add to the list, he's a pedophile.
So typically early teens, yeah. He would encourage orgies, and he claimed he didn't like his sexual deviance, but he was forced.
Why, what, the powers that be?
To do this for the cause of his church and God. Sex was a form of dominance for him. He was controlling people's minds and bodies. Jim had buses for his congregation that would travel across the country preaching and trying to recruit more followers. But he had his own bus. It was bus number 7. And he would also have sexcapades on it, and he would host them every night.
Ew.
He often would have sex with minors on the bus, and he would pick his followers as he wanted them and just have them meet him on the bus. He was really abusive, and he would do anything he could to get his hands on anyone he wanted.
Does this feel like Manson or?
Yeah. So around this time when the popularity was growing, he was convinced that like the FBI, like his paranoia was still growing. And he was like, FBI is going to get us. So Jim started to make plans to move everyone in the congregation to Guyana. Land was cheap. It was an English-speaking country. He claimed to like that they had a black president and that they had a socialist breath to it almost. And it wasn't touchable by the U.S. really. Guyana and the land he bought was really, really, really far away. So Guyana was far, but the land he bought was even farther than just Guyana, because not only was it...
Where is this?
Guyana. It's South America, I think.
Okay.
South America.
Okay.
So Guyana is not only a 24-hour plane ride, it's at least where the land was. It was a 24-hour plane ride, at least a 10-hour river boat ride, and a 2-hour ride on the back of a truck once they get there, just to get to the land that he bought.
What the hell?
They were literally in the middle of the rainforest.
Okay, which is, okay, so part of me feels like I've seen video footage of this or something, and I feel like once they get there is where I've seen the footage probably. From. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that's probably, I've like vaguely, mm-hmm. vaguely.
So about 50 of his followers with Jim Jr., his son, and Jim, they went there in 1976. Everyone was building the town for their community and creating propaganda as they built. And they were sending it back to the people in the United States. There were movies, and they would get played at every church service for every week. And they would just continue to brainwash these people and make them want to go to the community. And they were getting them ready. They were literally like grooming them.
Yeah.
Everyone that was there building the town loved it in the videos, but they really loved it in general too. They described it as the best time of their lives. Jim and his family were there, so his wife, his children, everything like that. They were working nonstop, but the atmosphere was nice and welcoming, and they felt they could see that they were having an impact, you know, that they were doing things and it was helpful. They were growing their own food with a huge garden, and they had livestock. People described it as almost heavenly. Jones was making videos with massive amounts of fruit, raving about the quality and the quantity that they were able to grow there, and sending the videos back to the United States. But in reality, they couldn't grow enough food to even provide for the people that were already there.
They're still having, like, they're trying to get people to come there when they can't even feed the people that are there?
Mm-hmm. So this was less than 100 people at this point. So they were buying fruit, leaving the tags on it, and sending the videos over. Some of the followers were like, come to find out, like looking back at it, like you could see the tags on the fruit. So they were buying the fruit, all those things, sending videos over. Joan promised higher education for the people to come over, a better way of living, literally like.
It's the promised land is what he's promising. Yeah.
Yeah, literally the promised land. Yeah. It's euphoria. Suicide was talked about often with Jim, actually. He kept bringing up the idea to people to kind of just see their reaction and almost get them used to it. He claimed the death, whether it be suicide or whatever people did, would be to protest capitalism, and that's kind of how he spun it. He suggested a bunch of people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge at once or putting people in a plane and crashing it. He did a dry run of the actual suicide that we're about to talk about, at this point, most of his members were in Guyana, and that he had them all come from different cities. He put them on buses. He had them come from different planes, and he didn't want anyone to know that they literally were taking like 1,000 people and bringing them over almost 1,000 people. He did a dry run of the actual suicide. He gave everyone a little cup for communion, and after everyone drank it, he told everyone that they were just poisoned and they only had an hour to live. After a few minutes, he apparently started laughing and said it was a joke slash like test kind of thing, and that he wanted to make sure everyone was loyal to him. It's reported that everyone thought this was kind of odd, now that they're thinking about it after the fact, because they hadn't been able to have wine or anything sweet, anything other than like water, since they joined the church or since they moved to Guyana. So when most people saw that they were giving out a communion, they were thrilled. They were like, yes, this is not water. He staged suicide drills, but no one really thought that he would ever harm them. They thought it was more of a power play than anything, like not like a real practice. Some ex-members from the church actually contacted a journalist at the magazine New West to write an article about the crazy things that were going on. The article talked about him exploiting the elderly, being a drug addict, manipulating people. They highlighted all the bad things about him. This obviously made it more difficult to hide behind the smoke and mirrors that he put up of the faith healing, the civil rights activism, all of these things, that the Rainbow Family, everything like that. Once this article ran, this drove the People's Temple out of the United States for good and fully to Guyana. So he fully just made everyone go to Guyana.
Everyone that would, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was very few people that didn't. So he booked flights for everyone from different airports and made some people go to different states to take flights.
I have questions.
Yeah.
So they don't have enough, is it that they don't have enough money to feed everybody, or that they don't have enough resources to feed everybody? Because if he's putting people on planes and shit, why isn't he just having food shipped in? I have questions.
So they were telling everyone that they were just growing and eating their own livestock and stuff, and they were not dependent on food from outside sources, but that was not the case. So they were not able to grow enough food to live off from, but they were claiming they were able to.
But they were buying food then?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were rationing it because,
right,
they were trying to save money to build stuff and fly 900 people over. So as soon as the members arrived, Jim took all of their money, everyone's money, everything that they had, made them hand over their passports, and he didn't give them back. And asking for them back wasn't an option. He had their money, he had their passports, and they were there. When approached, they had a gate with armed guards, and Jim was continuously going crazier and crazier as each day went on. He didn't try to maintain the act of a good man anymore, or a healer, or a preacher. He was a very, very rude and mean person, and he wanted to teach everyone a lesson in front of people, and it was happening more and more, and he was violent. He installed a loudspeaker, and he literally would just sit there and speak at his people as often as possible. Literally, he would sit in like his own cottage thing and just speak over the loudspeaker, and like half of it wasn't even lucid thoughts at this point. His own children even say that they knew he was a dangerous man and something was seriously wrong. People describe him like a work camp or even a concentration camp, as some people said. There was no leaving. There was no communication with the outside world, no radios to listen to, no books to read, nothing other than listening to Jim Jones over the loudspeaker, just talking at them. He didn't allow people to talk, and he wouldn't let people see their families. He didn't allow any communication or people to even look each other in the eye at this point. There wasn't enough food at this point for people. They weren't able to provide enough, like they didn't have that income of the faith healing anymore because they weren't in the United States, and they didn't have enough money to provide, to go out and buy enough food, and they couldn't grow enough food. Although they didn't have enough food for the majority, Jim Jones was living the life. They talked about his, I think it was one of his sons in the documentary. They were like, everyone there lost weight. Jim gained weight. He was like, he was the only one. He always had cold Pepsi. He had a generator. He had his own cabbage. He had his own cabin with electricity, with ample food. And he, like I said, he plumped up there. He had a fridge. They said it was always stocked with Pepsi, which like they couldn't.
But nobody else could have anything, but he could.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he would just literally sit in his cabin with AC and speak over the loudspeaker and have people wait on him hand and foot. People started speaking out and saying that they wanted to leave. So they were taken by force to a different part of the town and injected with drugs to be sedated and never seen again. So it's assumed that they died there. I don't know how many people that was. People were purposefully hurting themselves to just get a break from the constant work. They were saying that they were literally working from like sun up to sundown. And one of the guys that was a survivor said that he was working, and one kid literally asked him to just break his hand. He was like, I just broke my hand. I just need like a day. And he was like, a day for a broken hand is like worth it at that point.
That is horrible.
And it was so sad. The town started doing suicide drills more often. The drills would happen all the time, middle of the night, middle of the day, and people would be made to drink Kool-Aid. And he would be announcing over the loudspeaker that they were under attack and people were going to take the children. Therefore, everyone had to commit suicide.
Jesus.
Jim started taking votes on the actual mass suicide. And the first vote, I think, only had two people vote yes to have mass suicide done, like to complete the mass suicide. And they were his two most loyal servant type people. And they were peer pressured, and people just continued to be peer pressured to convince them. These people were literally being broken down to get closer and closer to the mass suicide. Some people even report praying to die in their sleep. So they didn't.
Yeah, I was gonna say at that point, I feel like you'd get to this point where you're just like, fine, yes, let's just do it. I just want to get it over with. I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So investigations into the People's Temple continued and started to gain more importance because of the article that was written in that magazine that we talked about, and with more people speaking out about what was going on. So it was reported that about 1,000 people were being held against their will in Jonestown. And it was reported that Jim Jones had purchased enough cyanide to kill them all, which is true. So Leo Ryan, a congressman, and he was a representative for California, decided to launch an investigation into what was going on there. So Leo, two of his aides/assistants, and a few other people, reporters and stuff, decided to make a trip to Guyana. They started interviewing members at the church. Some videos were in the documentary. So if you're going to watch it, I suggest it. If anyone's really interested, it was really interesting. Jonestown served them a nice dinner and put on a show, a talent show for the reporters and the Congressman Ryan and everyone that was there. And Ryan spoke and he said everything seemed normal and that everyone seemed happy and cheerful. They put on a good show. So although like they put on that good front, some members actually asked to leave with them. One person, it's reported, secretly handed them a note and said, like, I want to leave. Like, I do not want to be here. Like, it's not safe. So at this point, things became super tense because the note, Congressman Ryan showed it to Jim Jones. And the mood and like literally everything just changed. The energy, it was just literally like a flip of a switch.
Anyways, that's horrible. Also, why did he show Jim? Why would he do that? That puts somebody at risk. That's dangerous.
Puts everyone at risk, yeah. So Jim was desperate to have the people stay until the cameras and investigators left. So he offered them cash, their passports, anything, pretty much anything to try to convince them. But it didn't work. He was offering them upwards of $5,000. So the more people saw others wanting to leave and speaking out, the more and more people that wanted to leave, and right. they were gaining courage. And then there was like couples fighting over children and whether they were going to stay or leave as a couple. But obviously, like, so when it was a couple with a child, one would be like, no, they're staying with me here. And the other one was like, no, like, we're going to take them. I'm going to take them back to the United States or whatever.
Oh my God.
Well, this was all going down. A follower of Jones pulled a knife on Congressman Ryan and put it to his neck and threatened his life. But someone actually was able to get the knife away from him. I'm not sure. Some people speculate that Jim Jones told him to do it. And some people just think that he did it on his own free will. But who knows? Investigators had a sigh of relief as they left, feeling like they were able to get away and escape with their lives, barely. As soon as they took off, Jones called his bodyguards and sent them after him and said, do not let the group leave alive. So they actually had to call for another plane, although the original plane that they took there was there waiting for them. But since they took back some other people, they needed another plane to fit everyone.
Sure.
During the waiting period, everyone was terrified that they wouldn't be able to get out of there safely, especially the followers that were leaving. As they were loading up, so like literally they waited for a while and the plane got there and they were like, whew, we can get out of here. But as they were loading up, Jones and his militant group showed up on tractors with assault rifles and started shooting.
No.
Five people were killed, three journalists / camera people, one former member that was trying to escape, and Congressman Ryan actually died there too.
No.
Most of the other people were definitely shot, and they played dead, and they were like, we're not getting out of this alive. But the shooting stopped, and Jones and his men left, and they were alive.
So he left thinking that they were all dead.
He left thinking they were all dead. So Jones went back, and he called everyone together and told them it was the time, and this was not a drill. They were going to commit mass suicide.
Jesus.
He announced to everyone that the people were coming and they wouldn't let them all, any of them, leave in peace. So they had to die in peace together. It would not be a peaceful death if they did not do this. Although he announced to people that it was not a drill, not everyone took him seriously. He said this many times.
He's the boy who cried wolf. I mean.
Yeah, they thought it wasn't going to be the last. They were like, okay, here's Jim just being Jim, you know?
Right.
Oh, suicide drill. Jim made it very clear that they were all going to drink poison. And if they attempted to run, the armed guards would shoot them. And they were ordered to kill anyone who attempted to flee. The adults made sure to kill the children first. Parents had the choice. Some of them chose to have their child drink the cyanide, and some injected them with needles. He told the adults not to tell the kids that they were going to die because they didn't want to frighten the kids. About 200 children and babies died.
I'm gonna cry. That is fucking horrible.
I know. A lot of people didn't want to die, though. They pretended to drink the Kool-Aid. They mixed it Kool-Aid and cyanide. So they pretended to drink the Kool-Aid, or they attempted to run. When they were found out that they pretended to drink it or that they were trying to run, they were being shot, or when people were saying no, they were injecting people in the back. If they could be caught with needles, like, they were injecting them with cyanide in the back. And they were just making sure everyone got the cyanide. Jim Jones died of a bullet wound to the head, and it's believed that it was self-inflicted, so he did not drink the poison. The sons of Jones, most of his children, so there was two of his sons in the documentary. I know at least two of his sons lived, Jim Jones Jr., which is actually his black son that he adopted. And then Stephen Gandhi was in the movie as well. They were both alive and in the movie. They were not there. They didn't die that day because they just
Or were they? There.
Jim Jones Jr. was at a basketball tournament or something somewhere else. I don't know where Stephen was. I think he was with his brother.
Okay.
I think he was like in his 20s at this point. So his wife died with him. I think a lot of his other children did as well. Prior to 9/11, Jonestown, the single greatest loss of American lives in a deliberate act. There was, I think I saw a total of 913 people died. About 200 of them were children and babies. So briefly, prior to my research on this, I had a really skewed version of Jonestown. I just want to talk about that for a moment. I thought that it was literally like everyone just sat down and drank the Kool-Aid, and it was a choice that everyone made, and there was no shooting or anything like that involved.
It was basically like, you're going to die one way or the other, so choose a less painful version.
Mm-hmm. And like the manipulation and everything, no one talked about that, you know, the abuse. This is not right, period, regardless of right. how it happened. But I think it's definitely a skewed idea of what happened there. So it was a really interesting case. And the other thing I do want to say, people were describing, like, first responders were describing going there and like finding everything. They were talking about how people were literally just laying together, and some people were like foaming at the mouth or like holding each other, or like there was just so many people that were falling on top of each other.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I just sent Taylor a picture of all the bodies. It was just so much
wow.
death. And the second picture is the tin of Kool-Aid that everyone had to drink. And
oh my God.
Mm-hmm. They were describing that parents were literally dying with just their children in their arms. And it was a very, very, very rough area. Oh, the other thing is when they flew the bodies back, a lot of...
Nope. Nope, 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 nope. There is a picture of town nursery. I'm gonna go ahead and scroll up from that. No, thank you.
It was a very disturbing thing. Oh, so the bodies, that's what I was talking about. So the bodies, when they came back, there was just a lot of people. One, they weren't being claimed. And two, when they were being claimed, the families were having a really hard time finding cemeteries that would allow their bodies to be buried there, because they didn't want that. There was such a bad reputation around it, and there was like the cult, and they didn't want to
associated
be,
with it.
They didn't want to associated with it, and they didn't want to discourage other people from wanting their loved ones to be buried there and stuff like that. So some people have still not been identified, I think. Like, I still think that there might be bodies. I think that they ended up just burying them in like a, I don't want to say a mass grave, but like a graveyard that they were able to just get a lot of plots in, and they ended up burying like the remainder of the bodies, but they still haven't been claimed or identified. Oh my I guess God,
it's horrible.
So yeah, and it was described as like people were literally just like foaming at the mouth, and like it was just a very not good thing. So
that's insanity. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible, horrible.
So, don't drink the Kool-Aid, kids. Yeah.
All
right. Okay.
That's it.
Bye. Have a great week, y'all. Bye.
We hope you join us every Monday for our weekly episode. And as an added bonus, we've deemed the first Sunday of every month as Serial Killer Sunday. So you can look forward to an extra long episode about our favorite serial killers once a month.
Go follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations, or Twitter at Naptime_podcast. If you want us to cover one of your favorite cases, please send your case suggestions to naptimeinvestigations@gmail.com or via the case suggestion link in our Instagram bio.
As always, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and thanks for joining this party.